Hey, today's daf is Arachin daf Yud Tes. Today we begin the fifth parak of Maseches Arachin. I want to thank Alicia Graf again very much for covering the daf while I am gone, and in advance for the next 2 weeks of covering the daf. We are going to begin Bez Hashem, the fifth parak, and today's shiur is once again sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. So the Mishnah is going to discuss if a person says something unusual. He says he's going to give his weight to the Beis HaMikdash. So what exactly does that mean, that he's going to give his weight to the Beis HaMikdash? Or he says he's going to give even more unusual, the weight of his hand. So what does that mean? How exactly does one weigh their hand in terms of giving it to the Beis HaMikdash? And then the Gemara is going to discuss if he didn't specify the what he's going to give exactly, meaning the weight of his hand in gold and silver, and he didn't say anything. So how we go with what is normally weighed, whatever the cheapest thing that's normally weighed is, and the Gemara is going to define what's called normally weighed. Then the Gemara is going to discuss what happens if someone sells, if someone's someone commits his height to the Beis HaMikdash. What does that mean? Well, he has to give something that is as tall as him. How thick does it have to be? And we're going to have various sfeikos also about if a person makes two nedarim, whether you if sfeikos about other lashonos as well that a person might use to commit to the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Gemara is going to define what is called yad and regel for different halachos, but particularly because we discuss over here if a person commits to give his yad or his regel. So how much of the arm is considered the yad, how much of the leg is considered the regel. And the Mishnah on Amud Beis is going to talk about someone who commits the value of his hand, not the size of his hand, or the weight of his hand rather, but the value of his hand, how much his hand is worth. So how do you assess how much a person's hand is worth? And the Gemara is going to discuss whether we require separate assessments when there are two separate commitments. And we're going to have various permutations of two separate commitments. Do we need to assess each time, or can you rely on a previous assessment? So let's begin. New Perek, Perek Chamishi, says the Mishnah. Ha'omer Mishkali Alai. A person who says, I'm going to give my weight. So no sin mishkalo. He's got to give his weight. What does that mean? Im kesef kesef, im zav zav. If it happens to be silver, it will be silver. If it's got to be gold, then it's going to be gold. And the Gemara is going to explain, what does that mean? If it happens, how do I know if it's supposed to be silver or gold? So the Gemara is going to discuss what exactly that line of the Mishnah means. But we followed up first with the story. Maisa bi'ima shel Yermatya sha'amra mishkal bidyalai. There was a story of the mother of Yermatya, which is a woman's name, who said that she's going to give the weight of her daughter, and she went to Yerushalayim and they weighed her daughter, and that's how much gold she gave, the weight of her daughter in gold. Mishkal yadi alai, if a person says he's going to give the weight of his hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer mimali chavis mayim, the way to measure the weight of his hand is you fill up a barrel to the very, very top with water, umachnisa ad marpeko, and he puts his hand in all the way until his armpit. That's how Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom seem to understand over here. Marpeko over here means all the way until his armpit, all the way until his shoulder. Tosos raises the kasha, because the brisa that the Gemara is going to bring on Amud Beis is going to call it the atzil, and it can't be that the atzil is the armpit, because the Gemara Maseches Vachem says that the Kohanim would not be choger in a makom zeah, but rather by atzile yedehem. So it sounds like whatever the atzil is, it's not a sweaty place. Now, if there is a sweaty place on the body, it is the armpit. So it's hard to imagine that the Gemara would call the armpit something that is not a sweaty place. And therefore, Tosfos says that you have to say that what we're talking over here, what we mean over here is the elbow, that the atzil is really the elbow. But the Ramban is miyashiv shitas Rashi. He says that the entire area from the elbow up until the top of the arm, up until the shoulder, is all called the atzil. Say Nachanami, when the Gemara spoke about the non-sweaty part, it was talking about the elbow, but over here our Gemara is talking about going all the way up until the shoulder. So again, we're discussing how it is that he measures the weight of his arm in order to give it to the Beis HaMikdash. So what does he do? He takes a bucket full of water all the way to the very top. He sticks his arm into the bucket up until until his armpit. And through that, a certain amount of water emerges, comes out, spills out of the bucket. Then he weighs out flesh and bones and sinews of a donkey that's roughly the size or as exact as he can be in terms of assessing the size of his arm. And he puts that into the bucket until the bucket fills back to the very top. And then he knows that the amount of basar, chamor, and gidim and atzamos of the chamor that he put in there was exactly the size of his arm, and therefore the exactly the volume of his arm. And we assume the weight of basar, gidim, atzamos of the chamor is similar to the weight of basar, gidim, atzamos of a human being, and therefore he now knows the weight of by weighing that basar, gidim, atzamos of a chamor, he now knows the weight of his arm. So Rabbi Yossi just points out this seems to be an extra step. Am Rabbi Yossi, v'chihechav shalachavin basar keneged basar v'atzamos keneged atzamos. Meaning, it's one thing if you want to tell me take basar atzamos and gidim of a chamor that seem to be the same size as your arm, measure it out, and if it looks like the same size as your arm, and weigh that out, and that's how you know the weight of your arm. So, what are we adding the water element over here? Why the water? Because we want to be even more precise. We want to be exact. We want to be 100% precise. So Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't help. You're going to put you'll do the whole thing with the water. You'll get the exact volume of your arm, but you're still not going to know the exact ratio of flesh to bone to sinew that you're going to be able to put the exact amount of chamar into to the water. So anyway, you're going to be imprecise. Yeah, figure out how much the hand is supposed to weigh, how much it's likely to weigh. It's impossible to get it with exact precision. The Achronim just point out that this is not the only place that you have such a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in terms of how precise one has to be when measuring something. You have such a similar machlokas when it comes to shear beitza in the 17th parak of Maseches Kelim. The mission over there says kebeitza sha'amru, when you want to decide, when you want to figure out how large is a kebeitza, so lo gedola v'lo katana ela beinonis, that you measure by an average beitza. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, now here's what you do. Maybe gedolish of gedolish, you bring the largest egg you could find, uktanish of uktanos, and the tiniest egg you could find, v'nosin l'tochamayim, you put them both in water, v'cholik esamayim, and then you take the difference. You take half of that volume of water, and that's your size of a kebeitza. And Om Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi commented over there, v'chimi modieni ezu gedolav ezu katani, you think that's going to be so accurate? You know, you're going to be able to find the world's largest egg, the world's smallest egg, and are you sure that the average is right in between? How are you going to know what's considered to be large, what's considered to be small, to even begin the experiment? Anyway, you're trying to be too precise. It's not going to help anyway. So you see, the Achronim point out that this seems to be the same machlokas. It's a machlokas about when we know that we can't be 100% precise, how much effort do we have to make to try to be as close as possible? And at what point can you just say, we'll estimate, we'll figure it out, we'll figure it out based on an estimate? So says the Gemara, in the Mishnah we had said, in kesef kesef zav zav, that if a person has committed to give his weight, so if it's gold, it's gold, if it's silver, it's silver. So what does that mean? Mayim kesef kesef zav zav. Some review the perish kesef, kesef. Perish zav zav. If he said, I'm going to give my weight in gold, he gives his weight in gold. If he said, I'm going to give my weight in silver, he gives his weight in silver. Says Mar Pshita, well, that's kind of obvious. If he said exactly what he's going to do, then obviously that's what he's got to give. Says Mar, no, Hakam Hashmalan. The Chiddush is as follows. Time of the perish, the reason he has to give in gold or silver is because he said exactly what he's going to give. Hello, perish. But if he didn't say exactly what he's going to give his weight in, then Pater Nafshe. Then he can give his weight in anything, even something that's extremely cheap. Meaning you're allowed to be makil, instead of saying he's going to give his weight in diamonds, we're allowed to be makil that he's going to give his weight in something that's very cheap. Kirachva, and that's like Rachva said, Damarachva, Ba'asra, Ditakli Kufra, in a place where they weigh out tar, pater nafshei afilu b'kufra, then he can give his weight in tar, as long as that's something that is normally weighed. The Lecha Mishnah in Hilchos Arachin, Perek Beis, Halacha Zayin writes that that's only if he says that his intention was to give his weight in tar. But without that, he can't give the cheapest thing, because the halacha is that stam nedarim are lahachmir. The Gemara Nedarim Daf Yud Ches says that stam nedarim are lahachmir. So if he's claiming now, oh, I meant my weight in the cheapest possible thing, then we believe him, and he's allowed to give his weight in the cheapest possible thing that is weighed. Something that it has to be something that's normally weighed, but in the cheapest possible thing. But if he doesn't say what he intended, or he doesn't remember what he intended, stam nedarim lahachmir. Then we always have to go l'chumra. The Ola Shlomo disagrees. He says that's only by a suffik neder, which is suffik iser. But suffik hektish has a din of suffik mamon. This is an interesting discussion that you have in Achronim, in Rishonim rather, when it comes to suffik tzedakah. We discussed a few weeks ago, I think, that if a person says he's going to give to tzedakah, but it was he doesn't remember how much he said he's going to give to tzedakah. Yeah, so what do you give? Do you give the largest amount it could have possibly been? That he knows he didn't commit $1 million to tzedakah. He's never given a check of more than $360 to anybody. So do you assume that $360 is his max? And therefore he's got to give the max? Or do you assume that, a dollar, maybe he meant a dollar? So it all depends on whether we assume that tzedakah is follows the rules of Isser V'Heter. If it's follow the rules of Isser V'Heter, so Savit Araisa L'Chumra, or does it follow the rules of Dini Mamnus? If it follows the rules of Dini Mamnus, then we say Amotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. So Safik Nidarim, we say Lahachmir, but not when you're giving money to the Beis Hamikdash. Money, says the Olah Shlomo, has a din of, when you're committing money to the Beis Hamikdash, has a din of Safik Mamon, Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. You would not necessarily be Machmir. So this is the discussion over here, when the fellow doesn't remember exactly what he intended to give, so can he still give the cheapest item? Lacha Mishnah makes the ukimta that he's only allowed to give the cheapest item when he claims that that's what he intended to do. So says Mar Pshita, isn't that also Pashut, that if he didn't say exactly what he's giving, he just said Mishkali Alai, that he could pater himself with the cheapest thing, so that's also Pashut. L'chora, that's difficult. Why is that Pashut? Meaning it's one thing to tell me that it's true, okay, I believe you that it's true, but why is it so Pashut that he can give the cheapest thing? So the Mutzal Me'esh writes that the Gemara does not really mean to say that that's Pashut, that he can give the cheapest thing. What the Gemara means to say is that it's Pashut that if they weigh tar, that he can give tar. Meaning the fact that he can give the cheapest thing that they weigh, that I get, that's Chiddush. But the fact that if they weigh tar, then he can give the weight of tar, so that's obvious. And if they weigh, the cheapest thing they weigh is, chicken, then he can give the weight in chicken. And if the cheapest thing they weigh is tables, whatever I don't care what the cheapest thing that they weigh is. Why is that a chiddush, that if they weigh tar, the cheapest thing they can give is tar? So says the Gemara answers that question. That's what's pashut. Lo tzricha di'ika tetaka v'ika dechayil. Not everyone weighs tar. Some people sell it by weight, and some people just fill up kelim with it and sell it that way. So ma'ad detema kiven dekulu lo takli lo. Kamash Milan. I might think, since not everybody weighs it, so it shouldn't count. So Kamash Milan, that it still counts as something that is weighed. This is reminiscent of the sugya Es Shedarko Limnos or Kol Shedarko Limnos. We say that a Davar Shebeminyan has certain things that are normally counted. A Davar Shebeminyan has certain halachos. That a Davar Shebeminyan is not batel, something that's normally counted, that's sold by number as opposed to just a box full of things, is not batel. So how do you determine what is called a Davar Shebeminyan? Is it Es Shedarko Limnos or Kol Shedarko Limnos? Is it something that some people count? Some people sell by number and some people don't? Or is it something that everybody counts? So a similar discussion over here, that I might have thought that if some people do and some people don't weigh it out, so I might have thought that that's not called something that's weighed. Kamash Mlon, it is called something that's weighed, and you're allowed to give your weight in that to the Beis HaMikdash. Amra Papa Ba'asu Detakli Shamke, in a place where they weigh onions, Pater Nafshe Afilu B'Shamke, then you could do that. Pshita, so says, isn't that obvious? L'tzricha Basa D'Shakli Shadi Trei Tlasa Ma'ad Detema Batal Torah's Mishkal Kamash Milan. Now the chiddush over here is that's called weighed, that's called something that they weighed, even though normally when they weigh it out, and then they throw in an extra couple anyway. So they weigh it to get a baseline, and then they throw in an extra couple. A lot of bakeries when I was younger, so I used to run the errands on Friday for my mother. We'd go to the bakery. Now it seems like all the cookies in the bakery are like prepackaged already. But you'd go there and they'd weigh. You tell them what you want, and they'd weigh it out for you. So they'd weigh a pound of cookies. They'd get to a pound, and then they throw a couple more on top of it. So why do they have to weigh it out for a pound if they're throwing a couple more on top of it anyway? Well, they're getting a baseline, and then they're being generous. They're giving you a little bit more. So when you have something like that, where they're getting a baseline, and then they're doing a little bit more, that's also called something that's weighed. One might have thought that that's not called something that's weighed. So two chidushim that the Gemara is saying about what we call something that is weighed. Even if not everybody weighs it, it's called something that's weighed. And even if, after weighing it, they throw in an extra couple, that's also called something that's weighed. And therefore, if a person commits his weight to the Beis HaMikdash, he can give his weight of the cheapest thing that fits those criteria. Maisa bi'ima shel Yirmatya. Then the Mishnah told the story of the mother of Yirmatya that gave her daughter's weight in gold. Says more Maisa Listar. Well, this is just so sort of what we just said. We just said you could give the cheapest thing, and now we're talking about a woman who gave her daughter's weight in gold. How does that help? So how does that explain the point? Chisur Mechzer V'Chitanya. Now there's another point that is meant to be made in between, or meant to be understood in between. That's what the Achronim point out, that when we say Chisur Mechzer, it doesn't mean that the Mishnah is actually missing words. It meant that the Mishnayos were written dafka in shorthand, and that you're supposed to fill in a certain blank in your mind before you read that Maisa. So the way you're supposed to fill in is as follows: Vim Adam Chashuv Hu Afagav Delo Pirish Lufi Kvoda Aminan. That if a person is an Adam Chashuv, then even if they didn't say explicitly what they're giving the weight in, we assess it based on their kavod, based on their wealth. And the mother of Yirmatya said, I'm going to give the weight of my daughter, and she had to give gold because she was an exceptionally wealthy person. So you got to give lefi kvodo, and that is lefi kvodo. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnah writes, Roim inyan ha'adam ahu imu asher gadol mefursam hareza lo niskavin el erek gadol. If it's a very famous, wealthy person, then it has to be a high value. So we take the most expensive thing we could find, namely gold. He writes a very similar thing in Yad HaChazaka as well. So in Briska Rav, he points out that the Rambam does not mean that it does not mean that we necessarily assume that that's what the person intended, that they intended to give gold. It's just that a Stam Adam, we based on that his kavana was for anything that is weighed, and that's why he can give whatever is normal to be weighed. But an usher gadol, we don't assume that he intends to give whatever happens to be weighed, and therefore we automatically revert back to stam nedarim lahachmir. Meaning, it's not that this is his intention. I don't know what his intention is, but it could have been any number of things. Stam nedarim lahachmir. So we always assume a stam neder is l'chumra. By a regular person, we don't assume stam nedarim lahachmir. We assume that he intended to give whatever is the cheapest thing that could possibly be weighed. That's how the Briska Rav understands this halacha. Now, in the Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam writes that we measure lefi mamono vidato. He doesn't just say lefi mamono. So Achronim point out, what does it mean, vidato? Sounds not like the Briska Rav, that we really look at what he would give. Meaning, sometimes you have a person who's very, very wealthy, but also exceptionally stingy. So such a person is probably not intending to give the weight in gold. You measure that too. And therefore, he would not have to give gold. It would have to be someone who's wealthy and generous to give the mishkal in zahav. Amar vida, omer komasi alai. A person says, I'm going to give my height to the Beis HaMikdash. Nosen sharvit she'enu nichvav. He has to give a stick that is as tall as him, but and it has to be thick enough that it's not bendable, because since he said his height, it means something that's able to stand on its own at his full height. But it doesn't have to be as thick as his body is. It doesn't have to, it could be much thinner than his body is, as long as it's strong enough to stand to his full height. Melo kamas yalai. If he doesn't just say kamas yalai, he says melo kamas, my full height. No sin sharvet anichlaf. Then he can give even less. Then he can give a stick that's as tall as him, but even if it's so thin that it bends over, it's unable to stand on its own. So meisveis, I asked the Gemara on review. It says in the Brisa kamas yalai melo kamas yalai no sin sharvet sheinu nichlaf, that regardless of whether he says kamasi or melo kamasi, either way, he has to give a stick that does not bend. Isn't that against what Rav Yehuda just said? Because Rav Yehuda just said that if he says Malo Kamasi, he can give a stick that would bend. So Huda Amar Rabbi Akiva. Now what you have to say is that Rav Yehuda is assuming, like a different Tana, like Rabbi Akiva, Didayik Lishna Yisera, that Rabbi Akiva always says that if a person used anything but the shortest formulation, then he must have meant something different. Whenever he adds an extra word into his formulation of his commitment, it must have meant something different. So if saying kamasi alai means you give a stick that cannot bend, melo kamasi must mean that you give a stick that can bend. It has to mean something. Where do we find Rabbi Akiva holds that every added word is meaningful? Titnan, because the Mishnah says in Maseches Baba Basra, Loas Habar Veloas Hados, that if a person sells a house, so there are Mishnais in Baba Basra that talk about what do we naturally assume is included in the house. Sometimes a person buys a house and they look and all the light fixtures are so nice and everything, and then they come and they buy the house and they do the walkthrough and everything's gone, right? That everything has been taken. So what sort of assumptions can you make? Do you assume that light fixtures are included or not? So there are laws about this, about whether there are standards about this. What is and is not a refrigerator included in Eretz Yisrael? Closets are not included, and appliances are not included. Over here, I think the assumption is appliances are included. So no, it's not the assumption. No, I always thought so. Okay, so whatever it is, but there are assumptions. So the Mishnah sets out those rules. So lois habar v'lois hados. It does not include the bar and the dos in the sale. So afal pi shakasav, and that's even if he writes umkavruma, that I'm selling you the house with all of its depth, meaning and height. So you would think that includes a bar that's underground. Nevertheless, even though he did not include it in the sale, v'tzarech likach l'derech. So the original owner still owns the bar that's in the backyard of that house, right? But he has to purchase the rights to walk to that bar because it involves going through the property that he just sold. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That's Rabbi Akiva's shita. The Chum mar meino tzarech. And the Chum say, no, obviously if he's keeping the bar for himself, then he's also keeping the walking rights to be able to get to the bar. He doesn't have to buy that. Umod Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva's mod, the bizman sha'amar lo, chutz me'elu, that if he says explicitly that I'm not selling you the bar v'dos, shein tzarech likach l'derech, then you definitely do not have to buy the rights to walk there. Alma kevin delo tzarech v'ka'amar v'tfuyeh milsa ka'asi. It must be that since he didn't need to say chutz mi bar v'dos, it's automatic that it's not included, and he said it anyway, it must mean that his kavanah was to add something new to this din. What's he adding to this din? That if he just would have left it as is, he's not retaining for himself the walking rights. But now that he added chutz from the bar v'dos, so he's also retaining for himself the rights to walk through the property, and he's not going to have to buy that separately. Why? Because if he said extra words, we darshed in those extra words. He must have meant something different. So Chanami, in our case as well, kivan de lo tzarech, since he didn't need to say melo kamasi alai, he could have just said kamasi alai v'kamar, but he said melo v'tfuyi mil sakasi. It must be that he's adding something new to the mashma'us of what he meant. The Rishonim point out that it's not really add, meaning Litfuye makes it sound like he's giving more. He's actually giving less, meaning if it was a stick that could stand on its own, it means it's a thicker stick. If it's a stick that cannot stand on its own, it's a thinner stick. So we're saying, hey, if he said Kamasi Alai, it's got to be a thicker one. It's got to be one that stands on its own. When he says Melo, he adds an extra word, then it could even be a thinner one. Litfuye Milsa doesn't mean that he's giving more, it just means that there's more to the story than what we would have assumed if he didn't add that extra word, that we have to interpret more. So Ibailu says the Gemara, what about the following lashonos that are unusual lashonos of what a person might commit? omdi mahu. What if a person says, I'm giving my standing to the Beis HaMikdash? Rochva mahu. Person says he's giving his width. Yeshivaso mahu. He's giving his sitting. So does he mean that he's giving a stick that's as tall as he is when he's sitting down, or does he mean that its length is like the width of his makom yeshiva? Ovyo mahu. He says he's giving his thickness. Does he mean a stick that's thick like his body is, you know, front to back? Or does he mean the length of the stick should be as thick as his body? Hekefa mahu. He says he's giving his circumference. Doesn't mean the circumference of his body, but he's not giving a shear to the rochav of the stick. And he could bring a thin stick. Or does he mean that the sharbet has to be as thick as his circumference? So take, the Gemara leaves all of this unresolved. All of it is a take with the Rambam Paskins in the second paragraph of Arach and Halacha Ches. That in all these lashonos that are suffic, he passes that they're suffic, and he says he has to give kefi mamono until he can say lo lekach niskavanti. Meaning he's got to give the maximum amount until you get to a point where he says, I definitely didn't mean that. So the maximum amount that he could have possibly meant. But if he dies, the Yorshim give kipachol shebelashonos. So if he himself is the one that's paying up the debt, then he has to pay the maximum possible amount. If it's not he that's paying it up, but his children after he dies, then they give the minimum possible amount. And the Kesef Mishnah explains that when he dies, we're makel on the Yorshim, because then it's a suffik mamon. And we say, amotzi mechavero alav haraya. But when he's alive, we're machmir, because we could ask him what his kavana was. So we're not just going to rely on hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. Lechem Mishnah explains a little differently, that as far as the noder himself, and this is what I would have thought as the pashtus, as far as the noder himself, safik nedarim lahachmir, it's a safik iser, so safik daraisa l'chumra. As far as the children are concerned, it's not their iser, they didn't take the neder, they just know that there's some sort of monetary obligation. So that's a din dinim amnis. That's when you would say hamotzi mechaver la haraya. Regardless of which interpretation of the Rambam you have, you see the Rambam understands that all of it remains a suffix, that the whole thing is a teku. That seems to be against Tosfos. Tosfos on Amud Aleph has a way of interpreting the Gemara that even though it seemed like a bunch of unrelated shilas of if a person says my width and my sitting and my standing, that it's really an imtim tzolomar, that each shaila depends on an assumed answer of the previous shaila. And there's a rule that whenever you have an imtim tzolomar in the Gemara, even if that series of imtim tzolomars ends in a teku, you always pass them like the imtim tzolomar. So if we say, is it A or is it B? If it's B, is it C or is it D? So then you always pass them like B, because we asked further within that side. If it's D, is it E or is it F? So you pass them like D. So Tosfos has a way of interpreting this Gemara that all of the shailas except for the last one are really no longer a suffix. They're really, because they're a series of imtim tzolomars. That seems to be against the Rambam, where the Rambam thinks everything remains a suffix, and that's why if he's alive, we're going to be machmir. If he's dead, we're going to be makel on the children. Okay, mishkal yadi alai. A person says he's going to give the weight of his hand. So we had this whole elaborate way of figuring out the weight of his hand using donkey bones and flesh and sinews and a bucket of water. And Rabbi Yossi says, you don't need all that. You just guess what it is, estimate what it is. So Tan Rabbanan, Mishkal Yadiu Mishkal Ragli Alai Rabbi Yudom, or maybe Chavz Mali Mayim Machnus Biyad Ad Ha'atzil Uber Regal Adar Kuva, that Rabbi Yudha says, if a guy says he's going to give the weight of his yad or the weight of his regel, you do the whole thing with the bucket, and he puts his arm in up until his armpit, and he puts his regel in until the arkuva, until the knee. We assume up until the knee is considered the regel, but beyond that is called a thigh. It's not considered the regel anymore. And v'shokel basar chamor gidim matzamos nosin etochat shetusmalei, and we weigh out basar gidim matzamos of a chamor, and we fill the bucket with it until the bucket gets filled back up with water. Vavli shen raya ledavar zech ledavar. Even though there's no raya that you dafka use chamors, chamors basar gidim matzamos, there's a remez to which shenemar asher bisar chamorim bisaram. The pasuk in Yecheskel says that their flesh is like the flesh of a chamor. It's referring to goyim, nevertheless, human beings, human flesh is like the flesh of a chamor, and that's why we weigh it out based on their flesh. It is interesting that we're assuming that the what's considered the not assuming the Gemara is saying explicitly what's considered the regel, what's considered the the yad. So the regel is only from the knee and down. Above that is considered the yerech. It's considered to be the thigh. Is not considered to be the regel. Shulchan Aruch writes that if a person has a tefach of an isha kinegdo in a place that's normally covered, he's not allowed to say Kriya Shema. And even if it's ishto, even if it's his wife, Shulchan Aruch writes to Nichlas Kriya Shema, that if there's a tefach of a woman exposed, a part of her body that's normally covered, then you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema, even if it's his wife, and even if there are no hirhurim at the time, and that's on any part of her body that's normally covered. However, there is another din called Shok B'Isha Erva. In addition to any tefach of her body normally covered, Shok B'Isha has two additional chumras. First of all, even if she normally does not cover it around the house, still it's considered an erva, like the Chayadim writes, the Mishabur writes. And another chumra by Shok, according to the Bach and the Taz, Shok B'Isha Erva is going to be erva for Kriya Shema, even if it's less than a tefach. Tefach is other parts of the body. Shok has certain chumras. So what exactly is the shok? Meaning, which part of the leg is the shok? That's the erva. So Prima Gadim has a chiddush that became very widely accepted, that shok is mehar kuva v'mayra. Shok is from the knee on up. Rashi writes by the shok that they give to the Kohen from the Karban Shlamim, that it's from the Perek Shalah Kuva, that goes together with the Rosh until the Perek Emtsa'i, meaning it's the upper portion of the leg, and that's what the Rambam paskins over there as well. And therefore, shok, which is sometimes called a yerech, it's sometimes called a thigh, it really means the same thing. The thigh and the shok are the same thing. And therefore, the Prima Gadim says that anything below the knee is not called the shok, and would not be part of this halacha of shok b'isha erva. So the Prima Gadim says that this geder of shok is the geder of yerech. That's our sugya, because the makam of the yerech is ad har kuva, and from there below it's called the regel. So that's what Tos writes in Maseches Nazir as well. That's what the Rambam writes, that as far as the mechnasayim that the Kohanim would wear, they would reach until the end of the yerech, which is the arkuva. So the Chazon Ish, however, says that he disagrees. Chazon Ish in Orchaim Simtazai in Osches, that the shok that we talk about is the shok b'yisharva, is the perek hatachton shel haregel. That it's from the knee down is the shok. And there are many, many sugyas and shas that seem to imply that way, that the term shok is the bottom part of the leg and not the top part of the leg. So this is a famous machlokas achron and machlokas aposkim. What do we consider shok? What does a woman need to cover? So is the standard that she to cover the knees? Lavdafka the knees. The point is that it's from the knees and above, but the way to be sure you're covering from the knees and above is to cover the knees as well? Or does she have to wear a skirt all the way down to her ankles to cover the entire shok? So that's a discussion in Achronim relating to this issue over here in our Gemara. So anyway, so says the Gemara, Amar lo Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi says back to Rabbi Yehuda, Heich efshar lechaven basar keneged basar, gidim keneged gidim, atzamos keneged atzamos. How are you ever going to measure it perfectly to get the exact amount, ratio of bone to sinew to flesh? You're not going to do it anyway. So Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda, omdin. Rabbi Yehuda says, you estimate roughly, you know, figure out how much bone is there in your arm, how much flesh, and figure it out with the equivalent by a donkey. So Amar lo Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Yosi said, Ad sha'omdin yamodu asayad. Well, if anyway you're only estimating, so you might as well just estimate how much your hand weighs. Meaning, you don't need to do this whole procedure. If anyway, it's going to boil down to estimating. It's going to come down to some inexact number anyway. Rabbi Yehuda, Kamada Efshar Avdina. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, yeah, but whatever we're able to do, that's what we try to do. As much as possible, we try to try to make sure that we're as accurate as possible. And as we said, that's probably the Shita Sam in the Machlokas and Maseches Kelim in terms of figuring out the Shir Kebetza. Biyad ad ha'atzil. So we said the when he says yad, it means up until the atzil. Or a minu, but I'll ask you a stira. Kiddush Adayim Raglayim by Migdash ad ha'perek. The Kiddush Adayim Raglayim that they did in the Migdash was only up until the wrist. So how can you say that this is all the way, that the yad means all the way up until the armpit? How come Kiddush Adayim Raglayim wasn't all the way up until the armpit? I'm assuming wrist. It's a machlokas rishonim, actually, whether it means the wrist or the elbow. So it's but let's assume whichever way. It's not the same. What we're asking is that it's not consistent. That on the one hand you're telling me yad means this much, and now you're telling me that as far as kiddush adayim raglayim, yad means less than that. So says Gemara, Dar Raisa Ad Perek, Benadarim Halacha Chalash Me'adam. Different halachos. When it comes to Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, we have to go with the technical definition of Yad. When it comes to Nedarim, we go with what people mean. We follow Lashon Bnei Adam. Says Gemara, Udar Raisa Ad Perek, V'Gavei Tefillin D'Chsev Yadecha, V'Tarnu D'Bei Menashe Yadcha Zu Kiboris. By Tefillin, it says Yadecha. You put your Tefillin on Yadecha, and the Yad means the upper part of the arm. That's the makom of Tefillin. Says Gemara, Dar Raisa Kiboris Kula. The Nedarim Halacha Chalash Bnei Adam and Kiddush Adayim Raglayim B'Mikdash Sugemirla. There are three levels. On a Daraisa level, the entire Kiboras is included in Yad. By Nedarim, we follow Lashon Bnei Adam, and that goes all the way until the armpit. And Kiddush Adayim Raglayim B'Mikdash is a separate halacha. That's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that it only has it only includes a lesser part of the arm. So there are actually three halachas. There's the technical Daraisa definition of the word Yad. There is the Lashon Bnei Adam of the word Yad, and there is the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim specifically that applies by Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. But the Makom Tefillin, that's an important comment that the Gemara has, that it's the Kibores is considered to be the Makom Tefillin. There is a discussion. The Gra brings a raya from our sugya in the Bira Gra in Shulchan Aruch and Simon Chav Zayin in Aruch Chaim as far as Hanachas Tefillin for someone whose arm is cut off. There's a machlokas who shown him what that person should do. Tosos Maseches Menachos and Daflam and Zayin says he has to put on tefillin shel yad on whatever's left of his arm and make a bracha on that hanacha. The Arzurua says he's pata legamri from putting it on, even though he has some part of his arm left. So the Rama paskins, because of the suffix, he should put on tefillin on his left arm and not recite a bracha. But the Magen Avraham says machlokas Rishonim is talui in the girsa in the Gemara Maseches Menachos. And he says that according to Tosos, you would put on the right hand without a bracha. So the Bira Gra says that the machlokas of Tanaim in the Gemara is only when the kiboras is cut off as well, because the kiboras is the makom hanachas tefillin. But as long as the kiboras is still there, meaning as long as the bicep is still there, the area where the bicep is still there, even if the whole bottom of the arm is cut off, says the Gra, you see from our sugya, then there's no shaila. Of course you put on tefillin on that part of the arm, and you say a bracha. This is one of the more common shailas that we have in camp. I just gave a shiur to the council. Shailas that frequently come up in camp. I didn't foresee this one to include this one. Lots of kids are breaking their wrists. They introduce, in an unrelated story, they introduce mountain biking as an activity. So the kids are breaking their wrists left and right. Maybe they should reassess mountain biking as an activity. So there are all these kids with casts. It's ridiculous. There are all these kids with casts walking around camp. So everyone has shailas about whether. Marasha did it first, so we had to copy. But whatever. So they had all these shailas about tefillin. So the halacha is there's no shaila that if there's no cast on the upper part of the arm, you put tefillin on the upper part of the arm with the bracha, everything, and you wrap it around. It's not going to be such a problem. There's a chatzitz on the bottom part of the arm. The ikur makom hanachas tefillin is on the upper part of the arm, the lower part of the upper part of the arm, right? The slope of the bicep. But that's the makom tefillin. Okay. Beregel ad arkuva, or a minu, are you sure the regel means until the arkuva? Regalim prat le balei kavin. Regalim excludes someone who's balei kavin. Balei kavin means just missing a foot, and therefore you could have like a false foot that he could stick his stump into and walk around normally. B'nedarim halacha chalash b'nei adam. Says, well, no, that's a din in nedarim. By a din in nedarim, we follow lashon b'nei adam. So daraisa prat le balei kavin says, but on a daraisa level, is the regel only the foot and not any other part of the leg? V'agabi chalitza d'chsev raglo v'tan chalta min arkuva l'mat chalitza s'ksheira. That if his leg is cut off, underneath the knee, then the chalitza is going to be kosher, as long as part of the shok is considered is still there. So why, when it comes to aliyah the regal, do we assume that if kaf raglo is cut off, but he's left with the shok, that he's going to be pater? It seems that we're working with different definitions of what's called the leg. So it says marna shiny awesome domer kra me'al raglo. Over there, when it comes to chalitza, the pasuk doesn't just say raglo; it says me'al raglo. So the regal might just be the foot. Me'al raglo is the area above the foot. If you ever see a chalitza, she would straps all the way up the whole calf, because that's all part of the regal. Ihachi says, "Mar, if that's the case, lemal me'arkuva nami, then it should be even above the arkuva." So says, "Mar, me'al lo me'al de me'al." No, it means me'al raglo, but not two steps up, only one step up above the regel. Amra papa shmami na hai istavira. You see that the ankle ad aranachis, that the ankle bone must go all the way down to the ground. Because if you hold that it stops, havli istavira me'al, then the ankle would be the me'al, vishaka me'al. And the shok, which again we're assuming in our Gemara that shok means the bottom part of the leg, under the knee but above the ankle, the shok would be the me'al de me'al and would not be included in the chalitza. So Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Tema Mifsak Pasuk. You could even say that the ankle is separate from the bottom of the foot and called the ba'adikara kikara dami. But still, the ankle goes together with the foot and is therefore like part of the foot. So me'al the foot would still be the shok, even though the ankle is an independent bone, but it's still considered to be since it's on the same level as the foot. So we assume that it's even if it's not the same bone, we assume that it's connected with the rest of the foot. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up at the Mishnah on the bottom of the base.